This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
This is, I guess, part two of my talk. I started off the very morning on talking about ADT. I've renamed my talk. I took chair's prerogative. And instead of calling it AR-targeted treatment, I want to make it a little bit broader and set in context what we're going to be doing this whole session. So it's really advanced prostate cancer, systemic therapy approaches, including AR-targeted therapy. And in a sense, Dr. Dekuchevsky has already done that by telling me what we're going to be covering today. I want to start with some definitions. And I should point out that some of these slides, especially the fancy animated ones, are Ivan's, so credit to him. But I think it's important that we set some definitions. It can be a little bit confusing, and I think people have already been sort of getting a sense of that, given the PSMA, how that changes how we view things. So just for definitions for the purposes of these talks, advanced prostate cancer, I would call prostate cancer in any setting in which local therapy is no longer sufficient to control the cancer. So it's very basic. It's outside of the prostate in some way. It's kind of the same thing as saying metastatic prostate cancer, which is prostate cancer, which is spread beyond the prostate gland. It can be determined by either conventional imaging or much more sensitive functional imaging like PSMA PET. And it generally, when we think of it, generally requires quote unquote systemic therapy. People have thrown that term around already. Systemic therapy just means treatment that goes throughout your whole system. And that includes ADT. So that said, as you have seen within the metastatic setting, we have oligometastatic and polymetastatic. You've already heard about oligometastatic disease from Dr. Hong. For those of you who don't appreciate, I think it's a Latin root. Oligo is in the oligarchy, the few. So when we say oligometastatic disease or oligorecurrent disease, we really mean prostate cancer, which has spread beyond the prostate cancer, but it's only a small number of spots. You've heard us talk already this morning. Is it one spot, as you can see on the top? You can treat it with SBRT. Do you go up to five? And so are those patients called, you know, advanced prostate cancer or not because you're using local therapy on them? It gets murky. For the purposes of the discussion now, we're not going to be talking about those patients. We already talked about them this morning. So we're really focusing on what we would call the opposite of oligometastatic disease or polymetastatic. That's a weird term. We don't really use it in practice that much, but it just means more spots than you could reasonably treat with targeted radiotherapy. And I've given you a picture of one of those, and Tom Hope showed a bunch of those also. Dr. Huggins' picture, I showed it to you earlier. With the definitions, we talk about quote unquote hormone sensitive prostate cancer. This is cancer that has not progressed on ADT or hasn't been treated at all. And we talked about ADT this morning. As we talked about, ADT is by far the single most effective therapy in metastatic prostate cancer. But despite that, we didn't talk about it this morning, I alluded to it. Despite that, if you are on it long enough, it will stop working. It's a given. And we'll talk about that a little bit. And so eventually prostate cancer cells adapt and are able to grow despite a low testosterone level. That scenario used to be called hormone-resistant prostate cancer. That term fell by the wayside. The truly correct term to use is androgen deprivation therapy-resistant prostate cancer, which is a mouthful. So you will hear people use this awful term, which is castration-resistant prostate cancer. And it just comes from the history that I told you about, that Dr. Huggins first tested hormonal therapy by doing an orchiectomy, surgical removal of the testicles. So that term is stuck, and you will hear all of us, unfortunately, talking about CRPC, or castration-resistant prostate cancer. So if you're, as I alluded to, if you are on ADT, you will develop CRPC if something else doesn't happen in the interval. So how does CRPC develop? And I think it's important to understand that because it gives you an understanding of our therapies in this setting. So if you look at the, this little pointer kind of works, over here, the very first circle, this is the prostate, and each one of those little circles within it represents hormonally sensitive cells. If you use ADT, you end up in the second large circle, killing off most, but not all of the cells. And in time, if you're on it enough, what we know is that prostate cancer cells develop genomic, genetic changes that we spoke about this morning that lead to a survival advantage so that those cells can grow in the resistant, in the low testosterone setting. And eventually, if you keep going with the ADT, those are the cells that grow out in this last circle. But I want to point out a couple things. That in this scenario, when all these cells, the resistant cells, the green cells have grown out, there are still a couple of those white cells left behind. So even when there's resistance to ADT, which I'm going to call treatment one, because we're going to talk about treatment two in a moment, there always remains a group of or clone of cells that remains hormonally sensitive. And it's for that reason that even when we see patients where clinically they've developed CRPC, their cancer is growing, despite being a low testosterone level, that we never stop ADT because of those little small remaining cells. So it's a pretty common question that we get. It's not working. Why do I have to stay on it? And the answer is, well, it is working. It's suppressing just that small clone. And what has been shown is that if you come off of it in patients with established widespread metastatic disease, that the cancer grows. So we want to avoid that. So CRPC essentially reflects this circle, next to last circle over here. And the question is, what are the treatment number twos that we can develop if ADT is treatment one to address CRPC? And I will say, and we get lots of questions about this as well, that new treatments, you're going to hear from Dr. Oh and momentarily on immunotherapy, almost always, not always, but almost always are tested in this setting, in the CRPC setting. For better or for worse, it's something that the FDA insists on because these are, in general, situations where there aren't a lot of good alternatives, and it's a good place to test new drugs because the FDA isn't worried about missing out on therapies that do work. So frequently then, our sequence is treatment one, and when treatment one stops working, we test treatment two. So here's a list of categories of drugs in the treatment two group. Additional hormone agents, I'm going to talk about immunotherapy, chemotherapy, radiopharmaceuticals, genomically targeted therapy. You're going to hear about all of these or have heard about these by all these people. So you've already begun to hear about PSMA and lutetium, genomically targeted therapy for BRCA deleted patients, you heard about earlier this morning, and et cetera. So I just wanted to show you that we've tried to cover the waterfront here. So when we add, if a new agent, if it turns out that we test one of these agents over here as treatment number two, and we see that it works, that it's effective, the Kaplan-Meier plots we talked about earlier look promising, then the typical development process is we say, okay, it works in that setting, let's move it early. Let's see if it works better earlier. And so we do treatment one plus treatment two at the same time. So ADT plus drug X. And that approach you'll hear referenced sometimes as quote unquote intensified ADT. And so this is Ivan's slide, you can tell because it's snazzy. If you look at these categories, chemotherapy and what we talked about earlier, the androgen signaling inhibitors, they were first developed as, well, ADT, first of all, we know, I just told you, we're going to keep it from hormone sensitive all the way through castration resistant, but docetaxel and abiraterone and enzalutamide, darolutamide, apalutamide, as we discussed this morning, have been developed initially in the castration resistant setting. But because they worked so well in that setting, and I will tell you that UCSF was involved in the development of abiraterone in this space and apalutamide in this space, because they worked so well in that space and got FDA approval, that the next set of experiments was, well, what happens when we use them as intensified therapy? And so we move these early. And each one of these agents, as well as apalutamide and now darolutamide, have been shown as intensified ADT as being better. So what that means is that treatment one plus treatment two for these agents is better, substantially better, than treatment one followed by treatment two. Now, if any of you were paying attention this morning, you'd ask me, yeah, Eric, but can you show us a Kaplan-Meier plot that proves that? And the answer is, yeah, I showed it to you earlier. This is the slide I showed you when we were talking about how to interpret Kaplan-Meier plots. The upper curve is intensified ADT, that plus AA is plus abiraterone, which is an androgen signaling inhibitor. So this was one of the pivotal trials that established that the combination is better. And intensified ADT is the appropriate frontline therapy for men with metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer. If you look at national data, I'm going to go through this in a sec, only about 50 or 60% of men are actually with metastatic prostate cancer are actually getting intensified ADT nationally, which is crazy given the data that we have. I think at UCSF, we're probably close to 100%. It's the standard of care. Anyone who's not on intensified ADT for de novo metastatic prostate cancer really needs to be, it's the rare exception, and there are some. So the summary, intensified ADT has been shown to prolong survival in men with metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer now in 7 randomized clinical trials. Intensified ADT is the standard of care. We see people who are not on it. Doublet therapy, meaning ADT plus drug X, treatment two, whether it's taxotere or abiraterone or enzalutamide, they've never been compared head to head. So people often at times ask us, well, you know, which one should I choose? And a lot of times it's just based on the side effect profile and unique features for that individual patient. But I think we can make a statement that adding chemotherapy first instead of an ASI is inferior. There's not a direct comparison, but in an indirect association, there appears to be a significantly lower risk of progression if you use abiraterone instead of chemotherapy. And there's definitely impaired quality of life with chemotherapy as opposed to abiraterone. So given a choice at UCSF, we always, and I even nationally, we always will choose an ASI over chemotherapy, unless there are circumstances that just absolutely preclude the use of an ASI. And there, on occasion, there will be some. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time. We can talk about this in the fireside chat. Some people have heard about triplet therapy. Triplet therapy is saying, well, you know, if one of these two drugs helps, why not both? And so you throw in the kitchen sink. So it's ADT treatment one plus docetaxel chemotherapy plus an ASI. The triplet has not been compared in a clinical trial directly to the best doublet, which is not chemotherapy containing, but abiraterone containing, as I just told you. So it remains under some discussion. There are some centers that will kind of reflexively say, well, three is better than two because there are trials that have shown that, but only when it's compared against the worst doublet, which is the chemotherapy one. So we always want to approach this very cautiously because there are more side effects with chemotherapy. And if it is used, it should only be employed in patients with very extensive metastatic prostate cancer. I won't talk a whole lot more about that. When we talk about, this is another slide from Ivan, when we talk about patients with newly diagnosed metastatic prostate cancer, this is new, we've learned that the extent of disease that is present dictates the therapy that we use. So number one, if it's super extensive, so four or more bone metastases and visceral, meaning lung, liver, brain, first of all, those are circumstances in which we'll think about a triplet regimen. But the converse is also true. This morning, we talked about how we do that balance of dose de-intensification in people who don't need it and dose intensification in those who do. So if you have minimal extent of disease, it turns out that, now you guys know how our pros at interpreting Kaplan-Meier curves, that in patients with low volume disease, panel A on your left, if you give radiation to the prostate, even though the cancer is already metastasized, those curves split. I'm not sure you could drive a Mack truck between those lines, but you could drive a Chevette or a Prius. There is difference, and the difference translates to about 10% difference in survival at 3 years, which is not nothing. And so it's really fascinating to understand that even in men who have metastatic prostate cancer, if it's not too extensive, going back and radiating the primary, the prostate itself, has a survival advantage. And we think probably what's happening is it's just preventing additional showers of cells in the future, and that translates into improved survival. Whereas in patients who have very high volume disease, there's so many cells out there already that radiating the prostate probably doesn't make a difference. But this has become a standard of care for us. There's a lot of places that don't do it, and it is substandard. So, future directions. Let's, exactly as happened with abiraterone and taxotere, let's do treatment twos that have been proven and move them earlier. This is a Dekuchevsky slide, of course. So here's these various categories. And in fact, we know that ADT works across both and you need to continue it both. We've already talked about these two categories on both sides. And now there's these, right? So we've got, and you're gonna hear later today from Ivan about PSMA lutetium. I don't know that we'll touch base on radium, but we can take it in our Q&A. PARP inhibitors, you already heard about from Dr. Chow at the very beginning for BRCA-mutated tumors are very effective. Sipuleucel-T is an immune therapy. And so the question is, which of these can be used earlier? These are two trials that are ongoing, and I would predict that these are going to be positive in this setting. And that's how we're envisioning that this disease is going to change. Now, in time, I mean, if you're thinking about this, what's going to happen is we're going to be treating a bunch of patients with metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer with ADT, abiraterone, and maybe one of these next drugs. What happens when they get resistant to those? And that's the discovery process that we are involved in. And so we've been doing this for 10 years, and we do it better than anyone in the country, I think. Where we take a patient with resistant mCRPC at the top, we do a biopsy of a metastasis, we characterize it, we undertake the analysis, we do the genetic sequencing, which is on the left. You already got a picture of that earlier from Dr. Chow. And based on that, we develop novel treatments. We talked a little bit about, you know, targeting genetic mutations like a BRCA, but also going after surface molecules like PSMA. Bringing that back to the patient. Eventually, if there's resistance, we're going to biopsy those and learn from those. And so this iterative process is what keeps the field moving forward and keeping us one step ahead. So here are my conclusions, and then I'm going to hand it back over to Ivan. So I've already told you this. Men with metastatic hormone-sensitive prostate cancer should be treated with intensified ADT. And if you're not, it's not the standard of care. Only in very rare circumstances should intensification consist of ADT plus chemo. Triplet therapy, adding chemo and an ASI, can be considered, but only in patients with very extensive prostate cancer, and it has not been tested against ADT plus ASI. So we don't know if it's better at it. Radiation of the prostate and perhaps of all visible disease should be considered in HSPC patients with low volume disease. And I will tell you that we extrapolate from that data that I showed you with low volume disease where you radiate the prostate. If we see a patient with limited extent of prostate cancer, for example, on a PET scan, we'll try to radiate everything we can see because we think it has an advantage. There exist many options and growing to treat metastatic CRPC, and lessons that we learn in the mCRPC setting can often be applied earlier in the hormone-sensitive setting. So you're going to hear some really exciting stuff with immunotherapy from Dr. Oh momentarily, and there is no doubt in our mind that as those treatments get proved, we're going to move them earlier into system in the course of events. And I've already told you about biopsy and genomic sequencing. So this is where we're going. You know, in the old days, I've already shown you this picture of Charles Huggins that everyone shows. It's kind of a shotgun approach. We use hormones and hope for the best. It's important. A really important question was asked earlier today, like, how do you design studies if you're looking at these unique features and you become Mr. Spock with a laser that targets very, very specific? And I know I'm totally dating myself. My young colleagues are like, what? Huh? Okay. But all you guys now. So, you know, thanks for your attention.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.